Hello and welcome to our series of podcasts for Equine Health Week 2026 in partnership with Agria. For many of us, vaccinating our horses is just something that we tick off once or twice a year when we get that reminder through from the vet practice, and we don't tend to think too much about what it actually means and why we're doing it. However, this seemingly small action, when done right, can actually not only save our horses from serious or even potentially life-threatening diseases, but also safeguard the health of our national herd. Joining me to discuss the important role that vaccines play in protecting our horses are two vets from the Equine Infectious Disease Surveillance Group, which is based at Cambridge Veterinary School. First up, Hattie Bell graduated from the Cambridge Veterinary School in 2012 and worked in equine practice for 13 years, where her clinical focus was neonatal and reproductive medicine. She is now part of the EIDS team and supports the International Chelating Centre, which shares disease outbreak information from around the world. Welcome, Hattie.
Hi.
And joining Hattie is Tegan McGilvery. She qualified from the University of Pretoria, South Africa in 2008 and moved to the UK shortly after. She is a specialist in equine internal medicine with a special interest in epidemiology and infectious disease. Alongside her EIDS work, she's currently undertaking a PhD investigating how equine movements can affect infectious disease transmission. Welcome, Tegan.
Thank you very much.
Right, so let's dive straight in here. When we're talking about vaccinations for our horses, what diseases do we typically vaccinate against in the UK?
So there are a couple of core vaccines, and the most obvious one that most listeners will have heard about is against influenza or flu. It's a highly contagious virus that can be really debilitating to horses. Clinically, it typically starts with a high temperature, often the first sign, followed by a harsh dry cough, nasal discharge, lethargy, and a noticeable drop in performance. Horses can go off their food and just seem dull and flat. In some cases, that cough can persist for weeks. And even once they look brighter, their airways can take time to fully recover. So bringing them back into work too quickly can really risk longer term issues. Because it spreads so easily through the air and via contact, it can move rapidly through an entire yard. And as most people listening will know or have experienced, once flu gets in, it often means immediate lockdown, no horses in or out, competitions are cancelled, and it's a real disruption to routine. So on top of the welfare impact for the horse, there's also a significant financial and practical cost. It can take weeks and sometimes longer for a yard to fully recover and return to normal. So flu vaccines are also usually combined with protection against tetanus, and this is caused by the bacteria Clostridium tetani. Unlike flu, it's not contagious, but is extremely serious and fatal, so one that we really do need to consider. The bacteria are found in soil and can enter the body through wounds, surgical procedures such as castration, umbilical cords in newborn foals, but often it's something really small, a tiny wound you might not even notice, and that's all it takes for bacteria to enter the body. The infection then can lead to severe muscle stiffness, paralysis, and eventually respiratory failure, and treatment is really disappointingly difficult. So it's really important to make sure this is included in your vaccination program. Other vaccines are recommended when horses are at higher risk, especially those that travel or mix frequently with others. One of the key ones is equine herpes virus. There are several types, but vaccines mainly target EHV1 and EHV4. And these commonly cause respiratory disease, which is often mild, but can resemble flu and still result in yard shutdowns. Unfortunately, EHV1 can also, in some cases, lead to neurological disease. And this can range in severity, but has the potential to spread rapidly and become very serious and, again, unfortunately, fatal. So also, I just want to add here with my slight breeding hat on, is that EHV1 can cause abortion in pregnant mares and illness in newborn foals. So for this reason, vaccination is routinely used in breeding programmes, following a slightly different schedule to protect mares and their foals at the most vulnerable times, which is during late gestation. Just while I have you all, I think there's a couple of other important breeding vaccinations that are worth highlighting here, as they can be really important at specific times of a foal's life. So rotavirus, first of all, can be a really frustrating disease to manage as it affects young foals and causes severe diarrhea and dehydration. It spreads so quickly and can affect most of the foals on a yard. Biosecurity for this disease is really important, but vaccination of the mare during late pregnancy can really reduce the impact, as she will produce antibodies to give to the foal in her colostrum. Another is Lawsonia. It's a bacterial infection, actually more commonly associated with pigs, that affects weanlings and older foals. It causes thickening of the small intestine, which prevents proper absorption of nutrients and can lead to weight loss and disruption of blood pressure. And unmanaged, this can really unfortunately progress to be fatal. This disease not only affects large yards, the way this is spread is not completely clear, but it's thought wildlife in the environment can play a part. So vaccination here is becoming really popular, thankfully.
No, that was great. Thank you, Hattie. A very comprehensive list put there. And again, I guess this is where working with your vet to work out the diseases you do need to vaccinate for is going to be very key, because it's not always going to be the same for each horse. So how then does a vaccine actually work? I mean, because we kind of, the vet comes on the yard and they've got their little magic bottle and the syringe and it goes in the horse. But what is that vaccine actually doing? How is it working and protecting the horse?
That's a really good question, Rachel. And so essentially, a vaccine works by safely teaching the immune system how to recognize and fight a disease before the horse encounters it in real life. So a nice way to think of it, it's like giving the immune system a wanted poster. So when the real disease shows up, it's recognized immediately rather than the body having to figure it out from scratch. So depending on the type of vaccine, it might contain a weakened or inactivated version of the bacterial virus, a small piece of the pathogen, so bacterial virus, such as a protein, or instructions that allow the body to produce that protein itself. And even though vaccines can't cause disease themselves, the immune system still recognizes them as foreign and so mounts an immune response. And that response includes things like producing antibodies, which are proteins that can recognize and bind to the bacterial virus and help neutralize it, activating T cells, and these are specialized immune cells that can find and destroy infected cells. And crucially, the immune system also carries memory cells. So this means that if the horse is exposed to the real disease in the future, the body already knows what it's looking for, and the response is much faster and more effective. Antibodies are produced quickly, the infection is controlled sooner, and the horse is much more likely not to become seriously ill. It's important to remember that vaccination doesn't always prevent infection completely, and a horse may still pick up the disease, but it will usually be milder, shorter lived, and less likely to spread to others. And that's really a key benefit. So you're not just protecting the individual horse, but also reducing the risk to the wider yard and population.
When we vaccinate, obviously, particularly I'm thinking flu here, but I imagine it's going to be similar with the others, is you will have your initial course, and then afterwards it becomes a booster thing. So is that almost like teaching, as you say, that the first initial course is putting your wanted posters up, and the booster is almost like just reminding every now and again, actually, just remember, you are supposed to be looking out for this. You are supposed to be looking out for it.
Yes. So it's reminding the immune system, this is what you need to look for. And every time that you booster them, you're increasing the amount of antibodies that are produced again. So they naturally decline with time, but then you boost them and they go up again and provide that protection again.
And how often should we be doing the vaccinations? Because it does differ a little bit, and there's a bit of contention around that sometimes.
So vaccination schedules are based on research, and they measure how long these protective antibodies that are made remain in the horse's bloodstream. So for flu, studies show that the antibody levels begin to drop about 6 months after a booster. And this means horses exposed to flu more than 6 months after their last vaccination are more likely to develop more severe symptoms. So the vaccination course usually starts when foals are over 5 months. It's because younger foals have antibodies from their dam until then, but they can interfere with how well their own immune system responds to the vaccine. So then the primary course for that is two initial vaccinations, 21 to 60 days apart, and a third vaccination, 120 to 180 days after that. And so even though the data sheet and some governing bodies only assign annual vaccination, if you're at a busy yard or competing, sticking to the 6 monthly booster that is shown by research will keep those circulating antibodies high and reduce clinical disease and protect the yard. Tetanus is actually aimed at every other year, and there is mixed data on this, and antibodies with conferring immune protection can be found up to 5 years later. But given the severity of this, it's really devastating disease, this should be always the forefront of preventative medicine. Just going back to EHV as well, the vaccine course starts some 5 months again for the same reasons, with a second dose given 4 to 6 weeks later. And after this, boosters are typically given every 6 months, particularly in horses that travel frequently or in high stress environments such as competition and racing yards. And in breeding, just to reiterate, those are used to specifically target the highest risk time in the pregnant mother, which is 5, 7, and 9 months of pregnancy.
And I think it's probably worth flagging at this point, going back to the flu, the fact that obviously we've said ideally 6 months, but sometimes it is annual. And if you go over the annual, you do have to kind of start the course again and do your initial part before you can go back to your boosters. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And when you're doing particularly competition, FEI and BHA, you want to be aware of that they are 6 monthly and then the others are annual. The most important is if you go past your annual vaccination, you will have to restart. And I know that can be frustrating, but it really is making sure that the antibody level that you have is sufficient and going to actually have an impact on your horse, not just for the books.
And I think we've sort of touched on it a little bit already, but by doing this, not only are we protecting our own horses, but it's the national herd as well. It's the wider impact and the wider protection for everything that we've got. And why is this so important?
Yeah, that's true, Rachel. So as I mentioned before, vaccination protects both the individual horse and the wider population. So at the individual level, it reduces the risk of severe disease in vaccinated horses if they do get it. And it helps horses recover more quickly if they do become infected. But just as importantly, it reduces how much virus or bacteria an infected horse sheds into the environment, whether that's through coughing, nasal discharge, or direct contact. And that's what really drives spread between horses. So reducing the amount of bacteria and virus is really important in reducing spread. And this is where the concept of herd immunity comes in. So if enough horses in a population are vaccinated, it becomes much harder for a disease to spread. So even if one horse becomes infected, there are fewer susceptible horses around it. So the infection effectively runs out of places to go. And this is really important because it helps to slow down or even stop outbreaks. It protects more vulnerable horses, such as the young, elderly, or immunocompromised animals. And it reduces the overall disease burden across the whole population. And this is especially important for highly contagious diseases like flu, where spread can be really rapid, and also for diseases, as Hattie's mentioned, like EHV in our breeding programs. Vaccination can also be used strategically at times when disease risk increases, and having good immunity in place beforehand makes a real difference. For example, making sure horses are up to date before traveling, competing, or when new horses are arriving on the yard. So overall vaccination, it's not just about protecting one horse, it's about reducing the risk across the whole population. And there's some common misconceptions and concerns around vaccinations. And they're things like, my horse doesn't travel, so doesn't need vaccinating. So even if your horse stays at home, they're still at risk from other horses coming on and off the yard. And those horses may be going to competition clinics or even out on hacking routes. And this can bring infection back with them because these pathogens, they don't respect stable doors or fences. So vaccination helps protect the whole yard, not just that individual horse. Some people think that vaccines always prevent disease. And as we've mentioned a few times now, it is possible for a horse to still catch an infection. But as we said, it reduces the amount of bacteria and virus they shed and helps horses recover more quickly. And then the last point on concerns around vaccines is that some people feel that too many vaccines might overload the horse's system, but this isn't the case. Vaccines are designed to work with the immune system, not to overwhelm it, and horses are naturally exposed to loads of antigens or bacteria, viruses in their environment every day with no ill effect, and the vaccine schedules are carefully designed to be safe and effective. So overall, the benefits of vaccination far outweigh the risks.
Because in terms of the diseases that are airborne, they can travel quite a long way, can't they? So again, we're coming back to this point of, oh, my horse doesn't leave the yard, so he doesn't need vaccinating. But you could have a yard a reasonable distance away with flu and it could still get to them. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. And flu is a really important one with this. Under the ideal conditions, flu can be transmitted over a long distance. So neighbouring yards are potentially a source of infection.
And if we have an outbreak for one of these diseases, does that kind of change the vaccination protocol, or is there anything different the vets might do?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So it really depends on the disease and the specific situation. So it's always something that needs to be discussed with your vet. In some cases, vaccination can be used strategically to help reduce spread or protect horses that haven't yet been exposed. But in other situations, especially if horses may already be incubating the disease, vaccination might not be appropriate or effective at that point. So the most important steps during an outbreak are strict biosecurity measures, things like isolation, movement restrictions, and testing where appropriate. And the key message really is that that decision should not be made in isolation. Your vet will have a tailored approach based on the disease and the yard situation. So they will be in charge of those decisions.
That's great, particularly as I guess the situation is going to be very yard specific, situation specific. So yeah, using that knowledge of your vet who knows what they're doing, has studied for years to get to this point. Yeah, they should be your first port of call if you've got any suspicion that there has been a disease outbreak on your yard.
Absolutely.
We talked about a lot of the sort of the common diseases that we're vaccinating for now, but there are concerns now that we've got these more sort of tropical diseases coming close to our shores that we may well have to be vaccinating against in the future. Could you maybe explain about sort of some of those and the risk they do pose to our horses?
Yes, absolutely. And depending on a horse's travel plans, there really are ones that we need to consider. So West Nile virus, it's an emerging concern for the UK. And because although the majority of cases are asymptomatic, humans and horses can be infected, and it's a severe neurological condition which can be fatal. So West Nile virus is spread by mosquitoes. It's a vector-borne disease, and birds act as the main reservoir of the virus. So the mosquito bites the bird and then carries it on, bites another bird, and then passes it on to them. And horses and humans can obviously become infected if they get bitten by that infected mosquito. They do not generally get too sick, and they do not produce enough virus to pass that infection on. So they are considered dead-end hosts. So this means they can't pass it on to each other, which is quite important when we consider the epidemiology of this. But as I'll just go on to say, the location is really important. So traditionally, West Nile has been found in warmer regions, such as the Mediterranean. However, with warming climates and the spread of mosquito populations, cases have now been reported further north in Europe, including France, Germany and the Netherlands last year. And we did have a confirmed case reported to us at EIDS in the UK in October 2022. It was an unvaccinated horse that recently travelled from Spain, where the disease, as we know, is more common. And this highlights that travel plans and timing, particularly the late summer and autumn, when mosquitoes are most active, are important risk factors. And just to go back, importantly, that horse posed no direct infection risk to the other horses or people where it was cared for. As I said, they don't produce enough virus to pass it on. So if horses traveling to or competing in areas where West Nile is known to be present, so the Mediterranean, Spain, Italy, vaccination is available, and it should be considered and worth speaking to your vet about. But because as disease patterns continue to change, this vaccine may become more relevant for UK horses in the future.
And this is where the work that you guys do at the EIDS is so important, is it? Because you're tracking these diseases, where they're coming and how close they are getting to our shores.
Absolutely. A part of what we do at the EIDS is to manage the International Collating Centre. So we receive information daily from our counterparts across the globe, so America, Sweden, France particularly are good at reporting. And it allows us to see any emerging trends in diseases, particularly like West Nile flu outbreaks or EHV outbreaks that are happening in different spots that we can be aware of. And it is really important that we know what's happening in other shores, particularly when we have horses moving through those environments as well.
Yeah, so another thing that we do at the EIDS is we're able to provide support and advice to vets who are managing outbreaks. So that's just an extra layer of support if it's needed by anybody out in the field.
And one other disease that we are seeing some vaccination for these days is strangles, which obviously is another very, very infectious disease.
Yes, absolutely. And unfortunately, many respiratory diseases can look quite similar in early stages, with generally being off colour, temperature, some nasal discharge. And unfortunately, strangles is everyone's favourite. It's a highly contagious bacterial infection. It's caused by Streptococcus equi, and it spreads so easily through direct horse-to-horse contact, shared equipment, and even via people handling multiple horses. So outbreaks can develop quickly and often result in, again, yard lockdowns, movement restrictions, and significant disruptions. Typical signs include fever, nasal discharge, as I said, and abscess formation in the lymph nodes, which is where the name comes from. And right there around the head and neck under the jaw. And these can eventually burst out, which are quite disruptive and upsetting. And while many horses do recover, this disease can be distressing, prolonged, and occasionally lead to complications. So vaccination is not always part of a routine program for every horse, but it can be very useful in higher risk situations such as competition yards, sales environments, livery yards with frequent movement, and during an outbreak. So there is a relatively new vaccine available. It's protein-based vaccine, so it does not contain the live bacteria. And we think this is what helps reduce some of the side effects seen with some of the older vaccines. A significant response is seen after the first dose, and then a second is given 4 weeks later, which can be followed by regular boosters as directed again by your vet. And just as an aside or an extra, the advantage of this type of vaccine is that it supports DIVA, which is a differentiating infected from vaccinated animals approach. So this means that standard blood tests used during the investigations can still distinguish between vaccinated horses and those that are naturally infected. And this is something that's really helpful when managing these outbreaks.
We've talked there about outbreaks on the yard and throughout about how infectious these diseases are. Vaccination is obviously one key step in trying to reduce the risk of these diseases spreading and outbreaks happening. But it's probably worth us touching on some of the other things that we can do around our yards to try and do that and protect our horses from disease.
Yeah, so vaccination is just one part of disease prevention, and good biosecurity is just as important. And in many cases, it really makes a difference in stopping disease from entering or spreading on a yard. So at home, one of the most effective steps is isolating new arrivals. Any new horse coming onto a yard should ideally be kept separate for around 3 weeks. And that gives enough time for any underlying disease to show itself before they mix with others. It's also important to check their vaccination and health status before being introduced. And this means not just assuming a horse is up to date, but actually confirming records and being aware of any recent illness or potential exposure before the horse arrived. Simple hygiene measures go a really long way too. Keeping stables, equipment, water sources clean helps reduce the chances of infectious agents, so your viruses, bacteria, surviving in the environment. And alongside that, avoiding shared equipment, things like buckets, grooming kits, and tack can also significantly reduce transmission between horses. Good hand hygiene between handling different horses is also really important. It's also good to get into the habit of daily monitoring of horses for early signs of disease. So things like nasal discharge, coughing, lethargy, just taking note of those things and measuring temperatures where there's any suspicion. And this means that you can act quickly before something spreads more wildly. Get that horse isolated before anything spreads on. And importantly, every yard should have a clear outbreak plan. And that includes knowing how to isolate affected horses effectively and who to contact, so most importantly, your vet, and how to limit movement on and off the yard if needed. Having that plan in place ahead of time makes a huge difference in how effectively an outbreak is managed. It's also worth remembering, as we mentioned before, that even if your horse isn't traveling, they're still at risk if others on the yard do. And horses coming and going can bring infection back with them. So biosecurity really is a shared responsibility between everybody on the yard. When it comes to events and competitions, so going out with your horse, the risk of disease spread naturally increases because of the number of horses mixing from different locations. And that's where structured guidance becomes really important. Organizations like the Equine Infectious Disease Advisory Group provide practical protocols for venues, and things like managing horse flow, reducing contact between groups, and responding quickly to suspected cases is really important. So overall, as we said, vaccination is really important, but along with biosecurity, they work hand in hand, and you really need to have both to give your horses the best level of protection.
That's great. Thank you. And if you're listening to this and you are running equine events, those advice notes that Tegan mentioned there, you can find those on the British Equestrian website, which is www.britishequestrian.org.uk. And earlier in the week, if you've been following Equine Health Week, we did discuss the signs of good health, how to spot those in your horse, how to do things like take their temperature as well. So check back to earlier in the week and you can find some great resources there to help you monitor your horse's daily health. And as Tegan said, they spot those early signs of disease before they become a much bigger problem. So we've talked about quite a bit there, and it's been a really interesting discussion. But if you had to pick kind of your key takeaways for people listening, if you know, if they had to have one thing in the back of their head from what we've discussed today, what would you choose? I think we'll go with Tegan first.
Great. So I would pick vaccination, make sure your horse is up to date, and have a discussion with your vet about what the most appropriate vaccines are for your horse, if there is anything beyond the core vaccines that they might need, so that you can be really well informed about what's going to give your horse the most cover.
And Hattie?
I probably have two hats on. Is the breeding one, first of all, is if you are thinking of breeding a horse, make sure you do have a really good chat with your vet about what our vaccines are available. I think the particular ones, first of all, is EHV to maintain a pregnancy, but then the second ones of rotavirus and Lawsonia really may help your foal's health in the long run. And then the other is really biosecurity, again, with those foal diseases, but particularly yards. You can be so used to being in your own yard and things being done the same way. But actually, if you went in with open eyes and went into somebody else's yard, would you say that they were doing it right? So go back to what you're doing and do it yourself and just recheck your own plans and programs for it.
That's brilliant. Thank you very much. And I think our kind of one of our key themes actually across this whole week has been having that communication with your vet, having that conversation about all the elements of your horse's health. If you've got any concerns, anything like that, they are always on the end of the phone and willing to help you. So do make sure that your vet is one of your best friends, top of your phone book, if you've got any problems there at all. And if people want to find out more about what we have discussed today, are there any good resources out there for them to go and look at? Obviously, if we're running events, I've mentioned the venue notes, but is there anything else out there for them?
So yes, absolutely. We do have on our own website, which is equinesurveillance.org.uk, if you follow through to the forms and resources, there are some really great pages on there on specific diseases, what to do if you're presented with them, and the best management in these cases. And obviously, if you do have any other questions, the vet really is probably your best bet.
That's great. Thank you. And we will include a link to that on the Equine Health Week Hub, which you can find on our website, again, www.britishequestrian.org.uk. And on that hub, there'll be a banner at the top of the page, or if you go to the Equine tab at the top, you'll be able to find it. And everything we are sharing across this week, all the resources, all the podcast episodes, all the graphics we've shared on social media, everything will get collated there as well as a kind of one-stop shop for Equine Health Week 2026. So do check that out. It'll be updated as the week goes on. And it'll be a lasting resource there for the future as well. So if you've missed anything, that is the place to go. So, yeah, so as we've come to a close, I think, here, but it's been a really good conversation. I think, as I said at the start, vaccination is one of those things we just kind of do with our horses, but we don't think too much about why we're doing it. So hopefully this has kind of shed some light on the situation and you know, help people understand a bit more what's going on. So thank you both for joining us today.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you, Rachel. It's a really great week. So well done.
And thank you to everyone who has been listening at home as well. As I've mentioned, you can find all the resources there. You can find the rest of the podcast episodes from this week, wherever it is that you found this one, on your chosen podcast platform. And make sure you're following our social media pages as well, because there's lots of great infographics and things there and signposting out to some external resources. So do follow along there as well. And we hope you'll join us again soon for the rest of Equine Health Week.